from the Middle East to America, from the society to the church. Boy, it looks as if we live in a world in which right is wrong and wrong is right. We'll do our best to set things straight today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but and I'm still your thoroughly Jewish host, your thoroughly Messianic Jewish host, Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. But we have been talking a lot about Jewish issues from different angles during the week, the Passover season, the shootings in Kansas City, other critical issues like that. So we're going to be talking about a lot of other things on the broadcast today. However, if you have a Jewish-related question, by all means, give me a call at 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question you want to ask about Scripture, about Jewish tradition, about the Jewish calendar, about Messianic prophecy, about Jewish background to the New Testament, about Israel, Middle East, Palestinians, happy to take your questions at 866-34-TRUTH. We had a terrific talk earlier in the week with a caller named Fred, Palestinian who was born in Haifa in 1944 and had pretty much, except for the fact that we agree that salvation only comes through Jesus, in terms of so many other issues about Israelis, Palestinians, the exact opposite perspective of mine. We excerpted that call and we put it on our YouTube channel. And I encourage you to listen to that when you have an opportunity later today. You'll find it tremendously enlightening. And that to go there, just go to askdrbrown.org, to my website, askdrbrown.org, and just click on latest video or click on our YouTube icon to subscribe to our YouTube videos. I'm going to bring on a guest in a few minutes who's got quite a story to tell. We've been recounting it as it's gone on, but we're going to hear from him firsthand. But let me tie a bunch of things together. Yeah, the name of that video you look for is Dr. Brown Has a Lively Conversation with a Palestinian Caller. I so appreciated that he was able to express his differences freely. And yes, we have some profound differences. But I want to lay out something very fundamental. I wrote an article last night that's getting a ton of attention today. It's called A Shameful Day in Evangelical Christian Publishing. A major publisher saying that a new book coming out that says the Bible supports same-sex relationships, that the author of the book isn't a solid evangelical. He's a bold, young, evangelical author. Well, hang on, he's an evangelical, and he's saying that the Bible supports men having sex with men or women having sex with women in certain contexts. Are you kidding me? And the publisher is going to push it aggressively? Yes, exactly. And it brings us to a fundamental problem. Joey, I want you to play clip number 4, the words of Francis Schaeffer. And this ties in with perceptions about the Middle East crisis as well.
As far as facing humanism is concerned, the central thing is not the acceptance of Christ as Savior, but the fact that we have absolute truth in contrast to relative truth. And this is the real tension. Are we merely beginning with man as autonomous, or is the truth from a personal God gives us real absolutes, and therefore we're not only dealing with statistical averages? Now, this has a tremendous impact in the area of morals, in the impact of law and political life, as well as religious life.
When we start with God and God's absolutes, and then work our way down to people, then we will come to very different conclusions than if we start our way with people and work our way up to God. Then he is here to serve me as opposed to me being here to serve him. Oh, it makes a big difference. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Even like those of you who like disagree with me, we are all less free because of this. Everybody loses. There's not any winners.
Well, that was the arrest of Bill Walcott, a pro-life activist in Canada. And moments after that, my guest, Peter LaBarbera, was arrested. Peter is the president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. He's been a journalist and a conservative family activist for years. He was arrested in Canada after being barred from entry in Canada. Pete, you're safely back in the States now, but you've got a court appearance, don't you?
Yeah, Mike, how you doing? And thanks for having me on. We have a preliminary hearing on May 26th and then a court appearance after that. But I suspect these charges could be dropped because Bill Walcott, the pro-family, pro-life activist I worked with there in Canada, he'd already won the right under Canadian courts to have his speech protests, you know, his pro-life protests, and he condemned sodomy as a sin specifically at University of Regina, where we were ejected and then arrested.
All right, so you're on your way up to Canada. You're going to speak at a pro-life event, and a group tries to get you stopped. There was actually a letter campaign on your behalf from many leaders verifying who you are, testifying to your character and your work. And so you go up to Canada. The invitation is given for you to come from the organization. What happens when you get to the border?
Yes, and an opposition group in Canada actually tried to lobby the government to turn me away at the border, and that's really kind of what happened. I got there. Of course, they started asking me more and more questions. I ended up being at the customs place for office for over 3 hours. Mike, you wouldn't believe it. They searched my cell phone, searching through photos and messages in my cell phone. They searched my laptop. They went to my website, and then ultimately they issued a formal denial of entry to me. They gave me a choice of either leaving back for the United States or appealing. I appealed, and then the next day, thanks to some political pressure, I think from some senior conservative MPs in Canada, I was allowed back in.
Well, what were they looking for on your laptop, cell phone, website, and why did they deny you entry initially?
Okay, well, your listeners probably have heard of the hate speech laws in Canada, and this was a direct application of those. It's called a ban on hate propaganda, and of course it applies also to so-called sexual orientation, Mike, which you as an expert know means basically gays and lesbians, homosexuals. And so they were looking for allegedly hateful evidence of hate that would violate their hate propaganda law. They were specifically looking for my PowerPoint, and I didn't work on the PowerPoint partially before because I was, you know, worried that they would do this. They wanted my PowerPoint, and they were looking for any evidence they could of this so-called anti-gay hate, which would be banned under hate speech laws in Canada, which does not have a First Amendment like the United States.
All right. So you eventually get in, and then rather than just laying low, you end up at a public event with Bill. What were you doing? This is university. This wasn't an elementary school or anything like that. This was a university where Bill had already won, and the courts recognized his right to be outside the university speaking to people or sharing literature. What were you guys doing out there?
Well, he was just doing a life protest. He held a sign that said sodomy is sin. There was another sign that said Jesus forgives sinners. In fact, I think that's the sign I was holding when I got arrested. But the school, you know, they hate Bill Walcott, let's face it. And there's a quote from one of the school administrators, Mike. This is Orwellian. It says, "Our staff felt their material," meaning Bill Walcott's material, "would cause upset on this campus, discrimination and potential harm and harassment against members of the community." That was the provost, Tom Chase, of the University of Regina. And so basically the school said, we do not want him out. And then the Canadian police enforced that decision by the school. So they basically ignored the precedent of the courts. Now, I think what happened, this is what Bill thinks, there was a hate propaganda decision against Bill Walcott, as you well know, last year, I believe, or the year before. And so I think the left is now emboldened to ban so-called hateful speech, and that's why they ignored the previous court precedent and went after Walcott.
Got it. All right, so your case, you're still hopeful that the charges will be overturned. But right now, this is the stark reality of Canada. for many years when James Dobson was leading Focus on the Family, they would have to edit some of their shows for Canada or use different shows for Canada because they could not address certain issues as forthrightly there as here. There have been Christian leaders in Canada who have been banned for life from publicly addressing the issue of homosexuality. It goes on and on. If we look north, do we get a good idea of what's coming our way here in America, or is it already here in America?
Well, it's already here. You know, look at the case in New Mexico. We have a couple of Christian photographers, wonderful photographers. They're now forced under New Mexico law, using the sexual orientation law that was passed in New Mexico, and then it was upheld by the New Mexican Supreme Court, and then the U.S. Supreme Court didn't take the case. So as it now stands in New Mexico, not just Christians, but anybody who does business with the public, and that's pretty much everybody, can be forced to use their business to participate in a so-called same-sex marriage ceremony. And that's not freedom. To me, that's un-American, Mike.
Right. So in other words, they would be required to take the pictures, to pose the two men or the two women in romantic poses, to do everything that a wedding photographer would do, that they would be required by law to do it, which would be basically, if you went to, say, a Jewish caterer, that Jewish caterer could be required to provide pork for a wedding.
A Jewish photographer being forced to take pictures at a David Duke ceremony. I mean,
right.
It's the same thing, and this is really, and the New Mexico Supreme Court case, one of the judges actually said that this is part of the condition of citizenship. Having to do this. I mean, and to me, that's exactly the opposite. Our country was founded on religious freedom, and now we're abridging religious freedom in the name of so-called rights and tolerance.
Right. It would also mean if you really press the case that if you had a gay owned print shop, a homosexual owned print shop, and Westboro Baptist said, "We want you to print up flyers for us that said God hates fags," that they would be required to do that as well. I mean, it just becomes utter insanity.
Yeah. And I think we should err on the side of liberty, and it's not happening in Canada, but we can't really crow too much. I think we are freer than Canada, but you have to believe, we already see homosexual activists like Wayne Besson, championing this idea that businesses, even small businesses, should be forced to participate in these so-called homosexual marriage ceremonies. So if they're already doing that, then their basic position is that gay rights, so-called, supersedes our religious liberty.
Right. And that's been the way courts have been ruling. And of course, that is the public perception. Gay is the new black and therefore civil rights, etc. Pete, a question for you. I spent some time with you and your work in Chicago, and you've got courage, you've got zeal, you've got determination, you work hard, but you don't make money doing this. It's a tremendous financial burden for you and your family to do what you're doing. You get vilified day and night. You get vilified even more than I get vilified. Why in the world are you doing this?
Well, I just think, you have to stand up for God's values and not fear man. And, that's what it's all about. And I think these days it's a test of character. If you stand with God on this issue, I think it's a sign that you do fear God and not fear man. And, there's all sorts of groups who are doing all sorts of advocacy for the homosexual movement. I call it Big Gay Inc., and it's a big business. I mean, the CEOs at Human Rights Campaign, the CEO makes over $300,000. So this is a huge business. It's a sin movement. And I just think that you've got to stand on the side of truth, even if it does cost you. And by the way, Mike, as we both know, we think it costs us, and we both get called names and everything. But in Pakistan and other countries, Christians are dying for their faith. So if we're not even willing to be called a bigot or be persecuted in some small way compared to these real Christian martyrs, then shame on us.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that someone unfriends us on Facebook is not persecution. I remind folks of that as well. And we work with folks around the world. And I've washed the feet of widows, martyrs in India. These things are realities. Pete, for those who want to follow your work, where's the best place to go?
Yes, thank you, Michael. It's Americans for Truth, all written out, AmericansForTruth.com.
All right, AmericansForTruth.com. And listen, you will, if you go there regularly, you will be aware of what is happening with activism in society, things that may not be widely reported. the amazing thing, Pete, you get blamed for being unclean or filthy because you report some unclean, filthy thing that happened, and you get blamed for it. All you're doing is shining light in darkness. And in that, that's also an act of love, and that it brings people to repentance.
Well, thank you for all the great work you do, Mike. And yeah, it's the left applies a lot of dirty tactics, and that's just one of them. But now I think this new tack that they've taken is calling all of us haters. I mean, Michael, you are one of the most compassionate guys I've ever met on this issue and other issues, and yet they call you a hater. If you're a hater, then everybody in the pro-family movement is a hater.
Yeah, and that's the way it's going to be branded. So the quicker we wake up to that, the quicker we can stand. Hey, continue to stand strong, Pete. Glad you made it back safely. And hopefully the next video won't be you getting arrested again.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
All right, God bless. That's AmericansForTruth.com. We'll be back with your Jewish questions right here.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but we've got a couple guests on. Pete LaBarber, who was just on with us with Americans for Truth about homosexuality. And in the second hour, going to have a liberal Jewish radio host. Got some interesting questions to discuss with him. And otherwise, we will be thoroughly Jewish on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's start in Brooklyn, New York. Albin, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. My question is about the validity of the Jewish calendar as far as the year 57, 76 is concerned. Is that valid? Is that truth or not? Is it accurate in regards to biblical time or not?
No, that's just based on Jewish tradition. In other words, it's certainly not verifiably accurate. And on top, now, a traditional Jew would say it is. On top of that, there's an error in Jewish chronology that squeezes the Babylonian Persian periods into a shorter period of time overall. And it's well over 150-year error there. But either way, the question is, are there gaps in genealogies in Scripture, etc.? This is kind of the Jewish equivalent of the Archbishop Usher dating, and it would put the date of the earth very similar to this. But no, there's nothing that's verifiable about it. It's simply what traditional Jews would count, and a traditional Jew would say it is accurate, but I would differ with that.
Okay, one other question in regards to calendar. At the time of Moses, were there two calendars, like for instance in Exodus chapter 12, it says this is the beginning of the year for you, the beginning of month. Is that a religious calendar or is that a calendar that is truth in regards to having historical reality? Was there two calendars, in other words, at the time of Moses?
Yeah. In other words, the Egyptians, it's a great question, Alvin. The Israelites had been in Egypt for several hundred years. And during that time, they would have just been following the calendar that would have been kept in Egypt. Or if they had their own traditions before that of a calendar from the land of Canaan. But for sure, when God spoke in Exodus 12, this month to you is the beginning of months, that was new. That was now saying, okay, I'm liberating you and everything is going to be new from here on, including the calendar. Now, over the period of centuries, that changed as well, so that to a traditional Jew, the seventh month on the biblical calendar becomes the first month in terms of the new year, and you actually in Jewish tradition it recognizes four different calendars, including the civil calendar and the agricultural calendar, the religious calendar, etc. But for sure, in Exodus 12, when God said this month is the beginning of months, that was something new that he was starting. And there are Jews today that are called Karaite Jews. They do not embrace rabbinic tradition, but they seek to live by Torah law without rabbinic tradition, and they will celebrate this time of the year as the new year.
Okay, and will that mean that will it mean that it is a flawless system in regards to checking, or it still will be flawed because of a shortened chronological account? Well,
yeah, Alvin, I'm sorry. It's I'm having a really hard time hearing you. I don't know if you're going under train tracks or it's just the vehicle that you may be in, sir. I was unable to hear what you're saying. It was hard for our listeners as well. But what we do know is that the ancient calendar was a lunar calendar, because of which you have to have intercalary months. You have to have periodically another month that is added in. And it will still happen today, since this is to be a spring feast. Passover is to be an early spring feast. If it's going to fall too early in the year and it's going to be more of a winter feast, that would be a time when a month would be added to get it over into the spring. Sorry I couldn't hear the end of your question, but thank you for calling. Great questions indeed. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Jim in Woodbridge, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, I appreciate you and all you do. I just had a question about Hebrews chapter 12, 22, 23. I know there's a lot of your emphasis is on the nation of Israel and the, you know, I guess the right thing to say, the natural Jew and the restoration of everything there. But how do you explain this and put all this in context with Hebrews 12 and 23, where it says, you know, that we have come and all that?
Oh, yeah. Well, spiritually speaking, right, spiritually speaking, our citizenship is in heaven. Paul says that in Philippians, the third chapter, and he says we're waiting for the Savior to come from heaven and to transform these lowly bodies into these glorious bodies. There is a new Jerusalem that we are absolutely waiting for. So we've come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, right, to innumerable angels and festal gatherings. So there is that spiritual reality that we walk in 24/7. But certainly, when you get up in the morning, you still have to wake up. And when you go to work, you still have to put in your hours and you still have to pay bills. And when we stand up for righteousness and feed the poor and the hungry, those are realities. So in this world, there are earthly realities. And the promises to Abraham and his seed remain because of the faithfulness of God, because God's not a liar and God doesn't change his promises. So that remains the same. The Jewish people still need a place to live. When God acts on the earth, there is still world attack against that and world controversy against that, because of which we now see God's purposes unfold, and the salvation of Jewish people is an extraordinary part of redemption. So it's both and. Look at it the same way, Jim, in short, in terms of our citizenship is in heaven, and yet we live in this earth. Husbands, love your wives. We've come to the heavenly Jerusalem, but there's still a Jerusalem here on earth that we're to be praying for. Hey, got to run, but it's a good question. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got Jewish-related questions. We've got answers. Another reminder to my friends on WMCA, WAVA, to continue listening right after this break. Just go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, on your cell phone, your computer, AskDrBrown.org. And when you go there, just click on the banner to listen live to the Line of Fire, or WAVA, just continue to listen on the AM station. Friends, I want to strongly encourage you to visit my website right now. And right on the homepage, click on the link where you can order a signed and numbered special edition copy of my new book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? With the confusion that is out there and with churches, pastors, individuals not knowing which way to go on this, this book is super timely and could not be coming out at a better time. You will be tremendously enriched by it. And you can order it, pre-order the copy. Should be out within about 2 weeks. Just go to my website, right on the homepage. Can't miss it. AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. And just click right there on the special offer. We will get you a signed and numbered copy, personalized to you, as soon as the book is out.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast, 866-348-7884. Reading from intercessory letter sent out by our friends in Israel at Maoz. On Monday, while Israelis were putting the finishing touches on their Passover Seder tables, waiting for their guests to arrive, a family of four, a father, pregnant mother, and two children were making their way to a Seder on Hebron Highway. Again, a Seder is the traditional Jewish meal that is celebrated at the time of the Passover. Suddenly, their car was under fire. A Palestinian terrorist armed with an automatic weapon, noticing the yellow Israeli license plate, started shooting. The father was killed on the spot, and the mother was hit with several bullets. One of the children in the back was hurt by the shattered glass. Another car was hit in the incident. Well, this family is now struggling to come to terms with the horror. The Hamas and several Palestinian leaders already congratulated the terrorists, who is still in hiding with the successful murder of innocent Israelis. Israel already announced that it blames the terror act on the PA incitement against Israel. Another slice of daily life in certain parts of Israel. Another reason to be praying for the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and another reason to be praying for the Palestinians as well. Before I go to the phones, a very interesting story about a Palestinian university professor. It's quite a striking story. Professor Mohammed S. Dajani took 27 Palestinian students to Auschwitz. It was part of a joint venture between three universities on conflict resolution. Well, he brought the students over. They were very impacted by the trip. It gave them a greater understanding of the suffering of Jewish people in the past and some of their history, because we tend to know our stories. If you've ever counseled a husband and wife or two people in a conflict, one gives their story and it's totally persuasive. You think, man, there's not another side to this. And then the other one gives their story and think, wow, they're totally persuasive. In fact, there's the old joke about the rabbi who's counseling a couple, and the husband presents his case. The rabbi says, you're 100% right. It's all her fault. And the wife's upset. She presents her case, and the rabbi says to her, you're 100% right. It's all his fault. And the rabbi's assistant says, Rabbi, it's impossible that both of them are 100% right. And he looks at the assistant and he says, you know, you're 100% right. Well, it can often seem like that, but the fact is we do need to find out each other's stories. We do need to find out each other's histories and each other's perspectives. It doesn't change the truth, but it will certainly change our understanding of the truth and perhaps reveal truth to us we didn't know about. So Professor Dajani reportedly has been called a traitor by members of his community. He's got to have courage, because you know you risk your life doing this kind of thing. His university, Al-Quds University, disowned the trip and said the professor and the students acted in their personal capacity. He said this, as a matter of fact, I will do it again if given the opportunity. I will not hide. I will not deny. I will not be silent. I will not remain a bystander, even if the victims of the suffering I show empathy for are my perpetrators and my occupiers. So he is absolutely mainline Palestinian in terms of being against the so-called Israeli occupation. But he said this, my response to all this tirade is that my duty as a teacher is to teach, to have my students explore the unexplored, to open new horizons for my students, to guide my students out of the cave of perceptions and misperceptions, to see the facts and the reality on the ground. He said, the aim is not to get anyone's approval, but to do the right thing. That's a bit of a message for all of us, wouldn't you say? The aim is not to get anyone's approval, but to do the right thing. We will be right back and go straight to the phones.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, glad to be with you. We are in the midst of the Passover season. We are in the midst of the season where we also celebrate the death and resurrection of the Messiah. If you've got a Jewish-related question, 866-34-TRUTH. Remember to visit my website and check out my latest article. Go to AskDrBrown.org and click on latest article. In fact, there are a few that have been posted this week in case you missed them. The one that's getting a ton of attention is A Shameful Day in Evangelical Christian Publishing. It's been shared, over 4,300 times since 10:30 this morning on one website alone. All right, let's go back to the phones. Our friend Mendel in Baltimore, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How are you, Michael?
Doing very, very well.
Chag Sameach. We're in the middle of Passover.
Yes, we are. Chag Sameach to you as well.
Something which is a major news story that may not have been discussed in your program or too many others as well, and that happens to deal with what's happening in Ukraine and how it's a fulfillment of what the Vilna Gaon said would happen before the Messiah arrived. In fact, in the newspaper Der Blatt and in the Yated Neman, at least those two, there was a coverage of one of the leading sages of the Jewish people by the name of Rav Sternbach. Rav Sternbach in Israel announced that according to his great-great-grandfather, the Vilna Gaon, that when you see the Russian warships going into the Black Sea through the Straits of Bosphorus, that's the time that the redemption is at hand. And when you see them coming into Istanbul, Constantinople, that's the time to put on your Shabbos clothing because Mashiach is at hand. Now, what's exciting about this news to Lubavitchers such as myself is that we're seeing that one sage after another is now getting on the bandwagon that we are and have been in the time of the redemption from the time of the Gulf War in 1991. That's when the King Messiah, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, told us that we should publicize what it says in the text called the Yalkut Shmoni, that when you see Paras, which was Iraq at that time, making a war with Melech Arvi, that is the Kuwait, and then Aram, Russian Ramamas, it means the exalted nation, the United States gets in it, the Jewish people will be worried, what's going to be? And God says to the Jewish people, and some say it's Mashiach himself who says it, he says, Bani, my son, Al Tishrol, don't be afraid, Kol Shasisi, everything I've done, Asisa Bishvilchem, I've done it for your sake. Hagiyas Man Galaschem, the time of your redemption has arrived. So we see that the Rebbe told us that the era, the period of a redemption, started at that time, and now you have another sage coming along with him to say that the Mashiach, when we see it happening into Constantinople, will be here. And that what's amazing about that is that the Vilna Gaon was an antagonist to the beginning of the Hasidic movement. And when you see what's happening in Ukraine, it's important to note that it could be very well that this is the final place for this conflict to happen, although it shouldn't happen in any military sense, we hope, in the context of what it says in chapter 38 of Yechezkel, where it speaks about this ultimate war, and it's spoken about in Ezekiel there,
Let me just jump in and ask you a couple of questions, and I appreciate your sharing all that. Some of our listeners are not familiar with the name, so just to refresh them, the Vilna Gaon was one of the greatest traditional Jewish leaders, lived in the 18th century, and initially opposed the Hasidic movement vehemently, but of course that movement has gained much more acceptance in the centuries following. And Lubavitchers, the particular sect that my friend Mendel, a caller, belongs to, many of them believe that their deceased leader, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, was actually the Messiah, the one they call the Rebbe. And are you expecting him to appear or something? What do you expect? When you talk about redemption drawing near, many Christians are listening and say, yeah, absolutely, and the return of the Messiah is close, and Jesus is going to reveal himself to the Jewish people, and they're going to recognize who he is, etc., and he's going to set up his kingdom in Jerusalem. So they're saying, yes, it's getting closer and closer. Obviously, you're not expecting that, although I pray you'll be ready if we're live when that happens. But what are you expecting? What do you literally expect to happen? Do you expect the Rebbe to reappear somehow? What's your honest expectation?
Well, of course we expect the Rebbe to reappear, because that's what we have in our Jewish tradition about what happens to the Messiah, that he's going to appear, then he's going to be concealed, and then he's going to reappear. And that's why it's expressed in this way. My beloved is compared to a deer. Why? Because first, when you see a deer, he's revealed. Then the deer becomes concealed under the brush, and then he becomes revealed again. So too will be the Messiah. And so we expect, of course, that the Rebbe will reappear in a miraculous way and will lead us.
And what kind of way are you expecting?
Well, we're expecting that we're going to see the Rebbe again in his strength in a body, as he always has been. In fact, the Rebbe told us about the Rebbe Deshver, the previous Rebbe, that nothing has really changed. My father-in-law is still here among us, a soul in a body.
Right. But when you're in other words, I know by Scripture that the Messiah is going to appear in the clouds, that we will see Yeshua the Messiah glorified, coming in the clouds, and that the whole world will see him, and he will then descend to earth and set up his kingdom and destroy the wicked that oppose him. How are you expecting your leader to appear?
Well, of course, you're basing your belief on our Jewish scriptures. Christianity has taken our scriptures and claimed them for themselves, although you see that the suffering servant, the Jewish people, and in particular the Messiah, still continue to be in the forefront of everyone's minds. So the first one is that if the Jewish people are meritorious, then Messiah will be revealed in a miraculous way on the clouds. And if not, then he will have to come in a humble way on a donkey. But we're looking for this to happen in a miraculous way, because that's what we learned from the Rebbe. Just for a second, to get back to the Ukraine.
Hang on. I'll let you come back to that in a second. So you understand that the passage you're referring to in Sanhedrin, beginning in 96b, quoting from Daniel 7 and quoting from Zechariah 9, that is exactly what happened. The Messiah came riding on a donkey, just as he said, as Zechariah said he would, and he will return at the end in the clouds. In other words, it's not either or. The scripture tells us that both will happen, and that's where Jewish tradition is really wrong on this. You're saying it could be this, could be this. Jewish tradition says both will happen. How are they both going to happen? How is he going to come riding on a donkey, and how is he going to come in the clouds? Well, first he comes riding on a donkey, and he makes intercession for us and dies for our sins. At the end of the age, he'll come in the clouds, and at that point, we will be ready to receive him. Anyway, we've got 2 minutes before the break, so back to you about the Ukraine. Go ahead. Yeah.
Now, why should this be such a critical part of this process of redemption? And, of course, people want to get deeper insight into it and look into Ezekiel 38 to see Meshach is really Moscow, and that the parties that are in this now are really those who are prophesied to appear in the end times. So my take is that the reason Ukraine is so much involved in this is for two reasons. Number one, Russia, which we would say in Hebrew, is the idea, Ein Ov Mevadom. There's nothing but them. They are the communist regime who believes there's nothing but man. It stands for destroying any belief in God. So Ein Ov Mevadom. But what the Hasidic movement has propagated from the time of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of it, is Ein Ov Mevado. There's nothing but God. No true entity can exist without first being dependent and in existence, because God makes it so. So it really doesn't have an existence of its own. It's only a dependent existence. And so Ukraine had the Baal Shem Tov born there. That's where the Hasidic movement began. That's where he started spreading the wellsprings outward to show to the whole world that there is a God in the world, and what he does is creates the world so that he can have a dwelling place below. Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the King Messiah, was also born in the Ukraine. So it happens that he propagated in latter times these ideas, and we know that the person who finishes the touches of what he began is the person who is the one to look for as Messiah. So since the Lubavitcher Rebbe began the movement to bring all the Jewish people back to Torah and mitzvahs and to bring back the world to a recognition of God, as he did with the propagation of the seven commandments given to the nations, so he has the merit to finish this. And so that's why Ukraine is involved now.
All right, just got to jump in. I'm sorry. I'm out of time. And as always, try to give you extra time to speak. Hey, just bear in mind that for every one person that the Rebbe's touched in terms of a Gentile, bringing them into the knowledge of God, our Messiah, Jesus Yeshua, has touched hundreds of thousands, millions. Just want to keep the record clear. All right, thanks for calling.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, some months back, it's the first time we got a call from Mendel in Baltimore, an ultra-Orthodox Jew who wanted to present to your listening audience why he was convinced that his deceased leader, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, was actually the Messiah. And he's called in a number of times, and I've tried to give him the opportunity to present his viewpoints and have extended conversation. He's fully aware that from my viewpoint, it only enhances our message and what we understand scripturally. But I always enjoy dialogue. He's obviously very devoted to his position. And it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday after all. So hopefully you're able to follow that. And do I put credence in these prophetic words about Ukraine and all that? No, obviously not. But these are very dear convictions to Mendel. The bigger issue is that the prophetic scriptures lay out for us that Yeshua is the Messiah. And Messiah had to come and begin his work of redemption before the Second Temple was destroyed, which was almost 2,000 years ago. It's either him, which obviously is, or there's no other potential candidate. To the phones, Jacksonville, Florida. Joe, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I wanted to first start out and thank you for your interview with Lee Strobel. That interview changed my life. It changed the way I looked at the Bible, and I really appreciate you doing that.
Well, thank you so much. I guess in the book, The Case for the Real Jesus?
Yes.
Yes, well, thank you. And Lee is a terrific interviewer and puts together a great book, but I'm so pleased to hear that. Thank you, Joe.
My question is, I wanted to know your interpretation of Isaiah 53, the Hebrew word passage or verse 5, where they say in the King James it says wounded, in other translations it says pierced. What is the Hebrew word, and does that word, is it the same word in Psalm 22?
No, it's a different word in terms of the suffering that's used in Psalm 22. In the verse, of course, very famous to us as Messianic Jews, v'hu mechalami p'sareinu medukam mei avonoteinu. So he is pierced for our transgressions. He is crushed for our iniquities. The chastisement that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds, the King James strikes, by his wounds we are healed. So that's very clear. You know, you could say, does it mean pierced? Does it mean wounded? You know, just the slight difference in nuance there. But those are different words than are used in Psalm 22, and Psalm 22 is a very, very vivid picture of a righteous sufferer. A very, very vivid picture of someone who's delivered from the jaws of death, and the deliverance is so great that it brings praises to God from the ends of the earth. And obviously it finds its fulfillment in Jesus Yeshua. Not only so, whether the Hebrew should read, they pierce my hands or feet, you know, that's debatable. It's an issue of ancient Jewish manuscripts. It's not a Christian issue. It's a Jewish issue, actually, from ancient Jewish manuscripts and ancient Jewish translations and texts. But the key thing is that the description is such that it vividly fits the picture of someone being crucified. crucifixion did not exist in ancient Israel. As we often mention, crucifixion was a horrific form of death, an execution that was devised by the Persians. The Greeks learned it from the Persians. The Romans picked it up from the Greeks, and it was ultimately outlawed by the Romans because it was so barbaric, which is saying a lot. But the description there, all my bones are out of joint, and the picture of the person being embarrassed and humiliated and incapacitated in front of others is very much a picture that is fitting of crucifixion and becomes all the more striking when it finds its fulfillment in Jesus.
But what the King James for Isaiah 53:5 uses wounded instead of pierced, and I think that's a big difference. Pierced does signify crucifixion, but wounded doesn't. How is that translation? How do you get wounded out of that word? I think the word is bore through, which sounds more like pierced to me than wounded.
Yeah, bore through that would be in Psalm 22. If the word is there, they pierced my hands and feet. The word there would be bore through. But as far as that verse, you have to understand that when we're translating from one language to another, that words can be used with several different nuances of meaning. And if I say I struck someone, that could have different degrees of intensity. And, you know, how is that going to be translated into a language? You may have, for example, in the Hebrew language, there are many, many more words that have to do with viticulture, with the vine and wine and things like that than we have in English. In Arabic, there are many more words for parts of a camel than we'd have to describe things in English. And then in English, we have words that other languages don't have. So it's hard to argue for exact precision. Dictionaries will say it can mean pierce, it can mean wound. And as I'm looking, for example, at English translations, the ESV says pierced, the NET says wounded, the NIV says pierced, the New King James says wounded, the New Jewish Version says wounded, the NLT says pierced. But certainly to say that it is not just a general wounding, but a specific type of wounding, you can make a good case for that, and you could argue pierced to be the stronger meaning there, or at least the more specific meaning. If I was presenting it, I would say the Hebrew word speaks of a wounding, a piercing, which would be particularly relevant to someone being crucified.
Thank you for that explanation.
You bet. I appreciate the call, Joe, and again, appreciate the kind words. Friends, working hard with the team on getting the final work done for the launching of our revised Real Messiah website, with a ton of material that we've never had online, videos that we are still finishing and preparing, written text, all kinds of things that are going to enrich this website. And we're doing it with your help. You hold my hands up as we win a Jewish person to the Lord, as we raise up a missionary and send that person to the nations. You are literally holding our hands up and helping us do that very work. So would you stand with us? A great way to do it, where you can be blessed yourself, is to get a copy of my newest book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? Which we open up the Old Testament scriptures in ways that are tremendously important and get into Jewish background as well. The first edition, when it's printed, we number and sign the first few hundred copies. So to get yours now, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and right on the homepage, you can order the newest book coming out, Can You Be Gay and Christian? Again, it's pre-ordered. It'll be out in a couple of weeks, and this is a special first edition that we'll sign for you. So again, that's right at the website, askdrbrown.org. Make sure you click on latest article while you're there as well. My bottom line today in our discussion and debate with the Jewish community about Jesus, the question remains, what do the scriptures say? How do they describe our Messiah? From the Middle East to America, from the society to the church, boy, it looks as if we live in a world in which right is wrong and wrong is right. We'll do our best to set things straight today, right here on the Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. And taking a little deviation from our normal path of what we do on these days, if you have Jewish-related questions, biblical-related questions, questions about Israel, the Middle East, I will be taking your calls in a little while. But first, I have a special guest to welcome. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. My guest, David Pakman, is the host of the television, radio, and internet political program, The David Pakman Show. It's currently airing on over 160 television and radio stations. And David has been making the rounds in recent days because he interviewed 4 years ago the alleged Kansas City shooter, the raging anti-Semite Glenn Miller, or Glenn Cross, as he's been called. I've been on with David a number of times on his show. We've had our disagreements. This is my first time to have David on with me. So, David, welcome to my program. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, when you have to go, which will be in our second segment, you can do what I did to you the last time and wrap it up and say you got to get out of here, all right?
Well, you know, I tend not to do that. I like to be a good guest and stay on until the host says we've concluded the interview.
All right. Well, I got it. Fair enough. But I'll be conscious of your time. David, you've been making the rounds on major networks, CNN and others, discussing the interview you did with Glenn Miller. The reason I wanted to have you on was because you spoke about religious extremists, homophobes, and then this gentleman in that same category, and you didn't seem to qualify it. So I was thinking if we could get you on the air, that we could qualify some things and at least we could have a better understanding. So could you define for me first homophobia?
Well, so I, you know, to be honest, I was hesitant to come on your show because the article on WorldNet Daily, number one, it has 20 comments after 19 hours. So I was like, do I really need to respond to something that nobody else seems to be paying much attention to? And also, it had so many inaccuracies in it. But then I thought, you've been a good guy by being on my show. It would be hypocritical if I turned down your invitation. But I think that...
Oh, yeah, especially when I get so blatantly misrepresented and the comments that follow your YouTube videos are the most extremist, hateful, bigoted, ugly comments, some even wishing for harm to come to me, and that hasn't stopped me from coming on. So anyway,
no
back
question. And of course, Michael, when you post to your page the interviews you do with me, many of your followers wishing the same on me. But I want to think about positive things. I think you may have misunderstood what I said, so let me explain. Not everybody who is against same-sex marriage is an extremist homophobe. I want to be really clear, because when I went on these programs, they're 4 to 5 minute segments. You know how they don't give you any time at all. So I want to be really, really clear. If you are, for example, you believe gay men and women should be treated just like everybody else, you have no problem with it being against the law to fire someone simply because they're gay, you think the term fag is offensive, but you're just not comfortable defining marriage or allowing marriage to be two men or two women, I don't think you're an extremist homophobe. I disagree with you. As you know, I don't think that that's the right position. It's an increasingly unpopular position if we look at the polling, but I am not considering those people to be extremists. The extremists are the ones who go around screaming that they or God or whoever hate fags. They support anti-science so-called treatments like ex-gay therapy. They say gay people are demonically possessed.
Hang on. So you threw in a whole bunch of things there. So you're qualifying that some people are not extremist homophobes. But if we just come back and start with, could you define homophobia? And then I had a couple of questions about extremism. And you can comment on some of your own clips.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Extremism is something that we've talked about on my program quite a bit, and whether it's religious extremism, homophobia, racism, etc., I'm interested in what's the source of that.
All right, Michael Brown here. My guest, David Pakman, is the host of the television, radio, and internet political program, The David Pakman Show, and I've been a guest with David a few times already. David, I know you're super busy doing interviews, so I do appreciate you coming on with me. Again, my concern, that was a clip when you were on with Aaron Burnett, CNN. The word homophobia is used so freely. I'm constantly bashed as a homophobe because I don't endorse homosexual practice or homosexual marriage as being God's ideal or what I want to see in society. There are people who call me religious extremist because I believe the Bible is God's word. Here we have a horrific situation with the Kansas City shooter, who we all agree is an extremist, and we're both Jews. I mean, he hates us, regardless of our political or religious beliefs. And the terms are used so freely, and it seems in what you're saying, it plays right into that when you just you put everyone in the same class without ever defining or nuancing at all, which I think is pretty easy to do. So that's why I thought it would just be helpful if you could define what you mean by homophobia.
I don't know how relevant it is for me to be defining words. I'm not the dictionary, but for the sake of picking something, I would say homophobia would be the dictionary definition, right? An extreme and or irrational aversion or fear of homosexuality and gay people.
All right. Totally agree with you. So in your mind, am I a homophobe?
I don't know your full repertoire. I mean, in the conversations I've had with you, that's the feeling I got. I mean, I'm not the authority, Michael, so I don't know if it's relevant for me to comment on that, right? I mean, when I was speaking on the Aaron Burnett show, I had very limited time, and what I indicated was I've spoken with extremists from all of these venues. But as I said in the first segment, which, by the way, was like the shortest radio segment I've ever heard of on any show.
Yeah, it's just an introductory one. That's how it is.
Yeah, it's just not everybody who is against legal same-sex marriage is an extremist homophobe. I made that very clear. I would disagree with them, but that doesn't make them extremist homophobes.
But you keep putting extremist homophobe together. Just homophobe, I mean, it's remarkable to me, and every time I've ever been on with you, and if you've read what I've written or any statement I've ever made, I've made perfectly clear that if there was an act of violence or anyone inciting hatred, I would stand against it. I do stand against it, but I'm not going to redefine marriage based on that, on someone's romantic attraction or sexual desires, nor am I going to rewrite the Bible based on that. And for you to say, well, it could be homophobe, and then here, I just want you to hear what people are hearing. Let's play clip number 5 on Alan Combs, because to me, you're making things very unclear. And by the way, I can write articles that get viewed by tens of thousands of people, and I have 10 comments and articles that have 10,000 comments. You don't know by the amount of comments. But the fact is, I wasn't the only one wondering when they heard this. So I'm just looking for clarity. Clip number 5.
With all the extremists I interview, anti-gay, religious extremists, whoever it may be, I always think that they're very close to going over the edge from where it goes from just being rhetoric to being real-world action and violence.
Yeah.
So I wasn't uniquely surprised that this was the case, but when it happens with someone you've interviewed, of course it impacts you.
Yeah, and by the way, you did a super job on that interview. It was chilling to listen to in retrospect, but I commend you for the way you did the interview and handled yourself in the midst of it, which is not as easy to do as some people might think. But can you see what I'm hearing and others are hearing, that you are now suggesting that perhaps a committed Christian, someone like me, who is not going to hurt someone, I'd lay down my life to protect someone, that perhaps someone like me on your show or someone else, we might just be one step away from doing something crazy like this. This is what people are hearing in the emotional charged soundbite society we live in today. So you have the opportunity to clarify that for all of our listeners.
I'm just not sure what the question is, Michael. I mean, I interview all sorts of people, you never know who's eventually going to commit some kind of act. I don't see the future. I just don't know what you're asking me. I'm sorry.
Okay, when you say with all of these extremists, and you, right. then you mention anti-gay, religious, you mention it without qualifying. So in your book, I'm anti-gay. If I just said with all these Jews I interview, I have no idea who's going off the deep end next. You know, well, that includes you because you were a Jew on my show. It's inflammatory. And when you look, you know the environment out there. I was just collecting before the show here the latest death wishes on myself or colleagues. Here's one from a gay man. Try that hate speech here and you and I can see who wins at a knife fight. I would enjoy cutting your heart out. All right, to me, it's just rhetoric. But when you have that being expressed, you're not addressing that on your show. You're not having guests like that on your show. You're not calling them extremists. And by general definition, if we hold to the Bible and oppose same-sex marriage, we're now homophobes. Hey, we may be the next ones to go off the deep end. That seems to be what you're saying.
I mean, Michael, I'm not saying anything about anybody specific, but there's plenty of violence against gay people. So we know that there are some homophobes who commit violence against gay people, but I think you're trying to make a controversy out of nothing. I mean, there is violence against gay people. And I don't know who is going to commit that violence. What else do you want me to say? I just don't see the controversy.
Couldn't it be said, we're both communicators, we both have audiences, couldn't it be said, look, there are plenty of guests I have who differ with us on social moral issues, and they're not violent people, and I'm not talking about them, but there are these extremists, rather than painting with a broad brush. Here, let me ask you to respond. Clip number two, maybe this will help, and I'm not gonna beat a dead horse, but let's just try it one more time again as you're on with Aaron Burnett. Clip number two.
Were you ever concerned for your own safety? This is someone who, by the way, has been implicated in the murder of another
liberal Jewish radio host in 1984. He only served 3 years for that. Yeah, you know, with all of these extremists, I think they're all on the edge of rhetoric becoming real world violence. So a lot of people today have asked me, was there any sign that he specifically was ready to go further? We had the evidence from 1984 that he had gone further, but at the time there was nothing that made right. him stand out from the other extremists.
All right, the other extremists who are by definition people like millions of Americans who believe the Bible and don't want to redefine marriage. We are homophobes in your book. Homophobia is one of the categories of extremism that you mentioned. All of them could be on the edge. It's complete broad brushed, totally non-nuanced, and it's going to create a lot of fear and further hatred.
No, it's not broad brushed because it's based specifically on people that have been on my program. It's based on the threats that I get after I interview them that sometimes have to go to authorities. I don't know everybody in the country, right? What I know is after the people that have been on my show, like Miller and others, have finished their interview, I get identical types of emails, tweets, comments, and threats. Whether the person on my show espoused an anti-Jewish, anti-gay, anti-whatever view, the reaction is almost identical. So I don't know who's going to do what.
All right, look, I've been getting emails or Facebook posts last few days. Some Muslims responding to things I said with some of the ugliest stuff. We had to actually ban them. And then the
right,
typical
so you don't know
gay rhetoric.
You don't know who of them right. is going to commit violence, and I don't know either. We all get threats, and any of them might commit violence.
But I'm always careful to make a distinction between radical Muslims and your average Muslim living next door. No, look, you could be the nicest person in the world living next door and suddenly burn the house down and do something crazy. Any human being could do anything. But I'm constant. Look, when I mention you on the air, when I talk about threats that we get and things like that, which to me is, for the most part, just empty words, I said, David Pakman's not going to hurt. I can't guarantee that, but I want to make plain that I wouldn't think that you would do something like that. Or as ridiculous as some of the SPLC listings are, I make plain, no, I don't think they're out to hurt me physically or something. I'm constantly trying to make that distinction. Would it be that hard to say, look, there are plenty of people who don't endorse homosexuality or believe the Bible to be God's word, and they're not homophobes and they're not violent people, but there are plenty of crazy people out there. Would that be so hard to do?
So if I understand correctly, I just want to make sure I get it, because I do want to communicate well and understand. the reason for having me on your program, writing this article on WorldNet Daily, all of this, is that in a four-minute corporate media segment, I wasn't nuanced enough about the fact that not all homophobes will commit violence. Is that really the issue for all of this stuff?
Well, first thing, it's a bunch of appearances. It's what's on your channel. It's pretty much the standard thing. And even what you just said was inflammatory because you used the homophobe term again.
That's a term. Somebody who is a homophobe has an irrational and extreme fear of or aversion to homosexuality. It's
right, which
a word.
Is not
You're
which
mad
is
at
not
me for the dictionary.
Right, but it's not me. And now you put it on me. I might as
Whoever
well say.
I never mentioned your name, Michael. I never mentioned your
you
name
on
in
the
any
show.
Of those appearances. You're very self-centered to think I'm talking about you.
Well, David, God bless you, buddy. We're out of time.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I would have loved to have had more time with David. He only had 15 minutes, and by the time we told him he could stay on longer, I don't know if he was still there, but he wasn't able to anyway. Let me just take one more minute on this. I, again, don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I'm concerned about language that's used. I'm concerned about inflammatory language. So if I keep calling you a homophobe, and then I say I interview homophobes, and you never know what one of them is going to do, it's already put all of them in a certain class together. So if you, for example, go to look at the listing on YouTube on David's show, David Pacman show, it says the program focuses on the politics and news of the day, etc. He's been in a number of controversies involving homophobic and racist guests. He's known for controversial interviews with political and religious extremists, liberal and conservative politicians, and other guests. Yeah, so obviously, some people are going to fit in different categories. The question is, and again, it's in the context that I raised earlier in my article, which you can read on WorldNet Daily, is that when you have the Southern Poverty Law Center, which some people still look to as having some type of authority or reliability, the issue is it's a terrible, terrible mixture. But when you have them putting the American Family Association or the Family Research Council on their hate group list, which then leads quite directly to one deranged man getting the info from their website and going into the FRC headquarters 2 years ago and trying to kill people, finding their information on the map. And then you have the constant references to homophobes and so on and so forth. It's inflammatory. When you just have that shooting and now you're going to tie it in with homophobes, that's irresponsible. That's the point I was seeking to make. So just since David's not here, let's play one more clip. Clip number three, again, on Aaron Burnett. And you tell me if you think that I was fair or unfair with David. And if you were listening because you are a colleague of his or a regular viewer or listener to his show and you want to differ with me, please, by all means, the phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH. Even though it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we are deviating a little bit today from our norm. Clip number three.
You interview a lot of people because you focus on this issue of extremism. Where did he rank? Was he someone that was off the charts or no?
He was certainly near the top when it comes to how angry he was. Many times I'll interview homophobes, extreme religious zealots, etc. And while their rhetoric is incredibly hateful, towards me, they're very nice. And typically, they want to help people. Many, many times, they want to save people.
Right. So, again, when you hear, okay, homophobes and extremists, and they're very nice, they want to, well, so you have now painted a certain picture. And by the way, there are other conservative Christians that have been on the show that are labeled the same way. And notice that if you say that it's possible for someone to change, that it's possible through counseling for someone to change and have a decrease in their homosexual desires, that you are classified as a homophobe. That was the concern to me, the inflammatory language. It's really, really easy, really, really easy to nuance things and to say, look, there are plenty of folks who believe God's word to be true. You say it like this. There are plenty of conservative Christians who disagree with homosexual practice and same-sex marriage. Obviously, I'm not calling them all homophobes. I'm not putting them in the class of religious extremists. That's easily enough done. I've been on TV enough times with short periods of time or radio interviews with short periods of time. It's easy enough to nuance things. And at least David understands the concerns. He's a gifted young man. Let's see if he makes any adjustments. Easily enough. He could easily enough say, look, there are plenty of people on my show I differ with, but I don't brand them as religious extremists or homophobes because of those differences. Easy enough to say. And I would be surprised if someone who's in front of the media, interacting with media as a radio TV host like David, I'd be surprised if someone like that was not very much aware of the perception on a CNN or the perception on an Alan Colmes show. So what's my concern? Here. Oh, let's just see. When I debated Professor Eric Smaugh at the University of Central Florida 3 years ago on same-sex marriage, should it be legal? That was the topic that he proposed. We were only allowed to go on with the debate if we had four armed policemen present. That's how concerned they were that there would be an uproar, not attacking gays, but an uproar against this. I thought it was silly to have police there. The university, different vice presidents, different ones on staff, wanted to shut the whole thing down. This in Florida, which has it as on the books, marriage is the union of a man and woman. If anything, you could have said that his position was the controversial one. No, mine was. Four armed police in order to have it. And someone watched the debate, and here's what they post in response on YouTube. How do you expect me to be polite to a child abuser and a quack? This is the rhetoric coming against me. And by the way, I'm quite sure that there are none of my, quote, followers who have threatened to do David harm. His YouTube video channel says, we also provide you with interviews with the most outrageous religious nuts, racists, and zealots you've ever seen, and new video clips every single day. Isn't it simple to qualify? Hey, I've got plenty of guests who are deeply religious people who are not religious nuts, and plenty of conservative guests who are not homophobes. Nope. Not when you paint things a certain way. So in 2008, when Americans were voting in California to preserve marriage as a union of a man and woman, what were they being told? Prop 8 equals American Taliban. They were being called Nazis. I'm looking at some of the signs that were held up. Don't silence the Christians. Feed them to the lions. Why not focus on that extremism as well? 866-34-TRUTH. We come back. We are going to shift gears and get back to a thoroughly Jewish Thursday emphasis. But I want to let you know that controversy is raging now. A new book about to come out claiming that the Bible supports same-sex relationships, and the publisher involved with it is an evangelical publisher or publishing group. My book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, comes out just days after that. It is perfect timing. I encourage you to get your copy signed and numbered, pre-ordered, $30, postage paid, available through our ministry only. Can You Be Gay and Christian? It will answer your questions, and it will be a phenomenal tool to help you help many others. To order, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Right on the homepage, order your copy. As soon as it comes in, we'll have it signed and sent out to you, especially numbered as well.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. If you didn't read the article that David Packer, my guest, the first part of this hour was referring to, published on WorldNet Daily, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org. The site was down for hours yesterday, as were many others that were hosted by the same server. Just go to latest article and click there, and you'll see it. Where is it? Third article down, radio host groups homophobe Christians with KKK. All I was looking for was a little clarification, saying, of course, there are differences. It's so easy to put out a little qualifier. I mean, I try to do it constantly. If I talk about a term or concept that could be controversial, and yeah, time is short. It's not always easy to do it, but easily enough done if you bear it in mind. If your goal is not to be inflammatory. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go back to the phones before we get transitioned fully over to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And again, you have any call, any question relating to anything Jewish, be it the biblical calendar, be it messianic prophecy, be it Jewish background to the New Testament, be it things happening in Israel, the Middle East, 866-34-TRUTH. But we'll still follow through on my interaction with David Packman. Let's go to Charlie in Lexington, Kentucky. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Sure. Dr. Brown, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Well, good. A couple things. There's a great quote, actually, over the Duck Dynasty back in December when they made their supposedly anti-gay comments, and there was some chance of them coming off the air because A&E's caving to the whole PC culture. Camille Paglia, who, of course, is no friend of the right, basically said we're living in a Stalinist time now because, and I think, David, your previous guest sort of, you know, led in some credence to that. It's the idea that those of us that disagree or think that homosexuality is wrong, by definition, we're homophobes. And that's the question I would have loved to ask David is, do people who disagree with, who think that it's morally wrong to act out their homosexuality, that that's somehow homophobia? And it seems to me that's the position we're in right now as a
yeah,
culture.
You know, Charlie, and I wrote about this with the forced resignation of Brendan Eich. I have an article called I Hate to Say I Told You So. And folks, again, if they go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest article, it's just a couple down. If they scroll down, they'll find it. And I pointed out, yes, Camille Paglia years ago talked about gay activism becoming Stalinist. By the way, David Packman is a liberal Jew. He's a straight ally himself, not gay, just for whatever it's worth.
Sure.
It's irrelevant in terms of his stance or how I treat him as a human being, but just for the record. But Camille Paglia, who is lesbian, referred to gay activism being Stalinist. And Bill Maher had made the comment about, yeah, there really is a gay mafia. And then Andrew Sullivan, well-known gay journalist and author, said, if this is the way it's going, count me out. But the question is, and I've asked this to gay activists and others, can I embrace you as a fellow human being, protect you, care for you as a fellow human being, but not endorse your homosexuality without being homophobic? And I've been told, no, that's homophobic. So the definition that David gave of homophobia, totally agree with him on that. And yet, from every conversation we've ever had, there's no possible way that he could identify me as such, and yet it appears that he does. And that is the society we're living in. Hey, look, it was the plan. It's the plan to paint, I don't mean David, I mean gay activists, to use certain terminology, to paint a certain picture, to convey certain ideas, and to broad brush everyone. Hey, thank you for calling, Charlie. We'll take some more calls on this and your Jewish-related calls. 866-34-TRUTH.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and I am going to give you a few Jewish insights and Hebrew insights from Scripture. Before we're done, we're in the midst of the Passover season, and we are in the midst of celebrating the death and resurrection of Messiah. By the way, we'll be live here tomorrow. Many of you are off for what is traditionally known as Good Friday. Maybe that'll give you the opportunity to call, and may not have that opportunity normally. You may be busy working, so we'll be live. And for those of you who were listening yesterday, it was an interesting day. As the morning went on, yesterday morning, I was working some of my Job commentary, doing some other work, but I kind of felt this rising tide of spiritual oppression, just in this easily agitated internal frame of mind, which is not how I normally am. And then during the show, find out our website is down. It ended up being down for, 15, 18, I mean, just almost a whole 24-hour cycle, and many others were affected as well. And then there was a mishap, a technical mishap at the end of the show, and we lost basically the last 4 minutes. If you were listening, like, what happened to Dr. Brown? Mike, where are you? Yeah, we were gone. It was the most bizarre little series of events that we've had. So I had some concluding remarks to give yesterday about the Easter celebration and what to do and not do and so on. I'll give you those today. And I appreciate our crew working hard to make sure that we overcome these difficulties as they hit, because nobody plans them. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the phones. Mark in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, pleasure to be on. So my comment was with regards to David Pakman when he was on there. Initially, I was going to agree with what you had said before the break, saying that, you know, maybe it is the plan all along to go ahead and equate, racist and violent views with those who hold to biblical definitions of marriage, which you came out and said. So really my comment now is I'm wondering aloud if it really is the best approach to be giving the benefit of the doubt to those who are appearing to equate the two, you know, appearing to equate biblical views of marriage with violent, murderous, racist, or would it be better to directly confront people like Pakman and not really let them get away with it? I mean, I get the impression from David Pakman, he's certainly very eloquent, but he's got that sort of wide-eyed, innocent persona, you know, to be like, well, you know, are you making it all about you? I never said it was about you, and trying to deflect from what he's really trying to say. He absolutely is trying to equate the two, and I think that perhaps the strategy should be different to call him on the carpet on it instead of giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I appreciate the comments and the evaluation. The first thing is this. I always want to give the benefit of the doubt unless it's foolish. In any situation I'm dealing with, interpersonally, in ministry situations, in situations like this, because it's very easy to misread, it's very easy to perceive things wrongly or to have limited information. And if I'm going to err, or to say it properly, I want to start there, obviously not stick my head in the sand. That being said, I will raise concerns. So my concerns were, where is the nuancing? David's a communicator, I'm a communicator. Those of us that are on radio, TV, we're communicators. Hopefully we can think pretty quickly because we're in situations where you often don't have a lot of time to speak or a lot of time to react, and you have to weigh your words carefully as much as you're able. So hence the opportunity, I wrote an article, and as soon as the article was out, we asked David to come on the air and say, okay, here's what I've written, here's what you understand my issues are. You have the opportunity to clarify. And then if there was some type of renouncing of that, I would have then appended something to the article or posted something widely on Facebook and other places to circulate it as much as I could to say, I appreciate David Pakman saying X, Y, Z.
Sure.
Now,
right.
In fairness to him, he interviews a ton of people. I've been on with him a few times, but he interviews tons of people, and I'm sure he has some crazy people that he interviews, and I get some crazy calls as well. But let's say his show reaches out to people more like that, so he would have some that we would all agree are extremists that are on. But the problem is, I do know how he views us. You know, right. The homophobe word was used quite plainly. And from right. here on, my view is, if he doesn't nuance things, then it is intentional. Then he does want your average person to think, yeah, the Christian or the Jew or just the moral person who disagrees with redefining marriage and who does not sanction two men or two women in a romantic and sexual relationship, that person is a homophobe and therefore is in the same group as all these others.
Did you catch the one word that he kept saying too, when he would say, you know, homophobe is defined as somebody who has an irrational aversion or fear of. I'm wondering if focusing on the whole irrational part of it might be a good strategy to say, hey, you might say it's irrational to base it on the Bible. Here's why it's not. Or you may say it's irrational to say that it's not good for society. Here's why, apart from the Bible, we hold these views. So just kind of confronting it on that level as well. To say, you want to use the word homophobe, however, it's not irrational with my point of view. You may disagree, but it's not irrational.
Look, the fact is, and Mark, of course, I agree with that. I had just printed up the definition, which he basically used, that homophobia, irrational fear of, aversion to, discrimination against homosexuals. But even using that, then you could say, here, let's look at it like this. If we're sitting in a room and it's a 100-square-foot room, it's a really big room, or 500-square-foot room, excuse me, and we're sitting there talking and suddenly you start freaking out because you think you're going to be buried alive in this room, well, that's an irrational fear, right? Because it's claustrophobia or something. It's an irrational fear. You know, sometimes we deal with it with our kids. They have an irrational fear of something. Well, from the viewpoint of the homosexuality is perfectly acceptable, it is as right and normal as heterosexuality, two men, two women have the right to, quote, marry, etc., then the only opposition you can have to it is irrational. In other words, there are people who actually believe that the only possible reason that you do not endorse homosexual practice is because of your religious beliefs, which they will say are irrational and antiquated, or because of some ick factor that you have because you have a problem with it, which is also irrational. And that's obviously an issue to overcome. That's why the word has been used strategically for a long time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Mark, I do appreciate the call. And hey, listen, I'm glad I can interact with David, and he's a Jewish person like I am. The greatest thing would be to see him come to know Jesus as Messiah. Just like people prayed for me when I didn't welcome it, let's be praying for David. Thanks for the
Absolutely.
Call, Mark. I appreciate it. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. You know, the standard accusation you get, it's something that even David Pakman raised when I was on the air with him. And you know, we'll have this discussion, and that's it. We got a million other things to talk about, but it was worth bringing up. And I'm glad he did come on the air with me. But he said, you know, when said to me one time when I was on his show, well, you know, you focus on these issues a lot. You know, that I see people do that. They're actually closeted gays. Well, you know, aside from the absurdity of that, when you've been a red-blooded heterosexual your entire life, and if you have an issue with sexual thoughts, it's towards the opposite sex, and that's where you have to be disciplined, etc., and wonderfully happily married for 38 plus years. Aside from the absurdity of it, well, since he brings it up again, does that mean that he was closeted? Well, that actually was something that he was very upset about being accused of. I would have thought he'd be fine with it because it was, liberal bias and stuff, that he'd be totally fine with that. But that actually was upsetting. And I said, well, maybe you are. But perhaps he's a closeted religious extremist. I don't believe that for a second. That's idiotic. That's stupid. That's as idiotic and stupid as saying that because I oppose homosexual activism, that I must be a closeted homosexual person. Okay? It's as idiotic and stupid as saying that. But that's the whole thing that you're up against. It is just empty rhetoric. Here's my problem. let the real extremists be exposed as such. Be they gay activist extremists, be they religious right extremists, be they Muslim extremists, Jewish extremists, Christian extremists, atheist extremists, gay extremists, straight extremists. Let us do our best to marginalize them by not giving them credibility, and through rational thinking, let us expose their very real bigotries and biases. When you paint with the broad brush, everybody suffers.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, well, we haven't done a real Israel focus today or Jewish focus on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but let's remember that we've had a lot more Jewish discussion earlier in the week in the midst of Passover and other events taking place. Again, those listening right now, if you were listening at this time yesterday, we had a massive technical glitch that knocked out our last few minutes on the air. And as folks were scrambling to address that, didn't even realize that there was dead airspace. So you might have been wondering why we were giving you pause to thought. Now think about this. Just think about this. And then it went silent. Yeah, the longest stretch we've had in the history of our broadcast. And I trust it will stand as a lasting record, never to be challenged. Here's what I was going to say at the end of the show yesterday, where I come down on the whole Easter, Passover, Easter egg issue. Here's where I come down. Number one, the celebration should all be part of the larger Passover season. In other words, we shouldn't have two separate holidays. There's this one over here called Passover. There's this one over here called Easter. It's now making a separation that wasn't there. The Messiah died in the midst of the Passover celebration and rose from the dead in the midst of the Passover celebration, or in conjunction with, all right, Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits. So we shouldn't have it as two separate, well, you had two separate religions, Judaism and Christianity. I understand that, but you have one Messiah, one Jewish Messiah who came to fulfill what was written in the law and the prophets. In other words, in the Hebrew scriptures. He does not abolish, he fulfills. So that's the first thing that, If I could just snap my fingers and make it happen, that's what would happen. That's number one. Number two, I would not use the word Easter because it either conveys a separate Christian holiday or it conveys Easter eggs and those kind of things to a lot of people. And to a Jew, it means nothing. I am looking forward to Resurrection Sunday. Now, I know many people, Easter is sacred for them. I'm just saying for me, this is what I would do. And our whole emphasis, forget the Easter bunny and the eggs, our whole emphasis is on Messiah's death and his resurrection. Now, if it's important to you to commemorate his death on a Wednesday or a Thursday instead of a Friday because that's when you believe it happened, I don't believe that's a big issue in God's sight personally, nor is it one that I fight over or argue about. To be candid, no, I'm not getting into a chronological debate. The best evidence I've seen is still for crucifixion on Friday, but I don't even argue over it. And others may have good arguments for other days. Could be. It's something I have not devoted a lot of time to because to me, it is not that material. I'm not saying it's not worth discussing. I'm saying I want to major on the majors. For everyone to whom it is a precious, sacred time tomorrow to remember the Savior's death, and at this particular time of the year, you do. You remember his death more than any other time of the year. Wonderful. Glorious. And if you're a Messianic Jewish believer and your incorporation of the commemoration of his death at Passover and his resurrection at First Fruits comes out differently as long as you major on the majors. Whoops. As long as, yeah, see, we've got this big contraption here, this boom thing, and every so often if I swing my arm, you'll hear, you hear that. That's what that is. It's not something happening to your car, just so you know that. Let's major on the majors. One thing you will see in my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, is that we look carefully at the evidence of the Hebrew Scriptures. And it's very important to start in Genesis. It's very important to see the foundation that God establishes, male and female. It's very important to recognize in Genesis 2 the unique relationship between man and woman. The man is called Ish. The woman is called Isha. Why? Because she is taken out of the man. That is the play on words that is given there. And that's why the two, not just any two humans from the Hebrew perspective, not just any two humans, but a man and a woman, when they come back together, it is now bringing that unity. The one taken out of the other, now the two reunite in marriage and in sexual relationships, and with the normal possibility of procreation. That is what God established at marriage. There is a Jewish teaching that points out that the differences in spelling between the man, Ish, and the woman, Isha, also contain two letters, Yud and a He, a Y and an H, Yah, in other words. And that is ultimately what brings man and woman together in one. It is even beyond marriage itself. It is marriage as blessed by God with his presence in the midst of things. And as we get to a passage like Leviticus 18 that explicitly speaks against homosexual practice, again, as I lay out in my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, which will be out in just a couple of weeks, and you'll find it to be a very important and timely book, especially in the day and age in which we live, and very practical at that. But when a lot of people try to debate the word toeva, abomination, and say, well, it just means something ritually unclean, of course, that's not the case. There are many moral violations that Scripture speaks of as being toeva as well. But it comes from the verb ta'av, and ta'av, we know, means to detest. So it is speaking of something detestable, the act, not the person, the act. And you say, that's who I am. No, no, you are not your sexual actions. You are not your romantic attractions. You are a human being. And if you know the Lord, your identity, your primary identity is not preacher, teacher. It is not husband, wife. It is not computer programmer or policeman. Your primary identity is a child of God, son or daughter of God. Let us start our understanding there. Friends, one great way you can partner with us and at the same time be blessed is to pre-order a copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian? By the way, you need to read my latest article, A Shameful Day in Evangelical Publishing. I just looked up again. It was posted this morning at 10:30 on one website. It's been shared over 6,000 times since then. It's getting a lot of attention. You'll understand all the more why my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, is so important. The first few hundred copies that come in from the first printing will number, and I'll sign them personally to you with a scripture verse, $30, postage paid, and they should be in just a couple of weeks. You can order right on my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Askdrbrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. You'll also see some other special offers that you can take advantage of. So do that. You'll be blessed, and you'll be blessing us and helping us do the very work we're doing on this radio broadcast and far beyond. My bottom line today, if you have questions, if you have anxieties, if you have all types of issues you're trying to figure out, the answer is found in the Word, and it is that Word that points us to God.